You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here with a very special guest, one fitness enthusiast and comic book fan, Mr. Frank Rodriguez. Thank you for joining us, Frank.
Well, thank you for having me, Donald. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time.
Great. I'm so happy to have you on. For those that don't know, Frank is Scorch on our YouTube shows. He's an avid fan. He shows up all the time. We really appreciate you doing that, and it's really exciting to have you on tonight. So thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to discussing my favorite superhero, the Punisher, aka yes. Frank Castle.
That's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking my favorite superheroes, which is actually the guest's favorite superhero, and you just said it. Yours is the Punisher, Frank Castle. What is it about? What is the bare bones essence of this character that makes you love him so much?
Well, there's an old saying that when you've got nothing to lose. And since everything was taken from Frank Castle in the form of a mob killed his family because they witnessed them commit a murder, he was just this empty shell of a man. You couldn't take anything from him. And as a result, he became particularly dangerous. So there's that aspect of it. And I also like the fact that he's an anti-hero. He doesn't fit the mold of sort of the traditional Boy Scout do-gooder. You know, he has fewer reservations about taking a life. And, you know, he'll do what he has to do. And quite honestly, he's forced into that position because he does not have superpowers. He has to use more lethal means to take out the perps because he just doesn't have those superpowered abilities. The thing that's the most superpowered about the Punisher is just his iron will, you know, his determination. And in that respect, he's similar to Batman and others.
His ability to dodge bullets is also pretty amazing, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I take it he learned that in the Marines.
Yeah, he would have had to. Basically, the Punisher came about Amazing Spider-Man number 129 in 1974. He came on the scene, that beautifully iconic yellow cover where Spider-Man is basically in the sights, the gun sight of the Punisher, and the Punisher standing on the cover. What a fantastic introduction. Now, a lot of times, oddly enough, in Marvel comic books, when characters would make their first appearance, it would be in some random issue like Marvel 2-in-1 or Marvel Triple Action or Astonishing Tales or something. But this was a hugely successful comic book series, Spider-Man. And this was right in the prime time. This is the Romita era of the run of the Amazing Spider-Man. And they put him right on the freaking cover, right there. Big, bold, you know, it seemed like they knew what they were doing with this character. Like they knew he was going to be a success. And that's not always necessarily the case. But, you know, Jerry Conway, John Romita Sr., it seemed like they had him in their, pun intended, they had him in their sights from the beginning. And boy, did it work well. It was like a pretty much an instant hit. People loved the Punisher, and he just kept coming back and eventually got his own series. And then, you know, for him being the character that he is, he's just a man on a mission, like you said. He has this iron will, this determination. For him to just be a character with that simple essence about him, to have the legs that he has had, the running power, the strength of his character to just continue on. How many movies deep are we now? We're at least 4 or 5 films deep with the Punisher plus
definitely.
Netflix series. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. And I remember the first one with Dolph Lundgren in 1989, and I enjoyed it. There may have been some people that didn't like it, but I think for its time, it was exceptional. It was right up there with any other action flick of its genre. It was action-packed. And the thing about the Punisher is that it doesn't require a lot of special effects because he is an ordinary man. Mm-hmm. He's a Marine, but he's, you know, peak human ability. That doesn't require a lot of CGI and other complicated special effects. So you can just kind of put him in a lot of different TV and films and not have too much difficulty getting that made.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true. There's a budgetary thing with that character, which is super cool that, you know, they could see the potential of the character and the fact that the budget could be nominal compared to some of the others. And to be honest, that's why that Punisher movie got made in the 80s with Dolph Lundgren, is because we didn't see the true onset of the MCU of, you know, like these superheroes until the late 80s, very early 90s. And we only saw just a little tip of the iceberg with these guys because the technology started to catch up and CGI started to be developed. And they were like, okay, so now we finally can do a talking raccoon. You know, now we can do an angry tree that only speaks one phrase. And that's when the boom hit and everything. Blockbuster, when you think blockbuster now, you think comic book movie. It's synonymous with that. So the Punisher films are now so quiet in comparison. And I think that'll change. I think that'll change. I think that we're going to see him in some big things coming. And I don't know when exactly that's going to be. From what I've been told, it's probably going to be within the Moon Knight TV series that we're going to get on Disney Plus, but could be sooner. I just don't know.
Yes, and that takes me back to the late 1980s when it was common to see Moon Knight and the Punisher team up or even fight each other until they realized they were on the same side. So that should be exciting. And that brings up something else that I wanted to get into, and that was the overlap that the Punisher has with Spider-Man and Daredevil, because they're all in New York City. And at times, Spidey and Daredevil will try to stop the Punisher from dealing out justice. And I've always found that kind of interesting. I want to tell him, no, get out of his way. The Punisher knows what he's doing. Just let him handle it his own way. You know, right. But Spidey and Daredevil, they're these Boy Scouts. They're like, no, we can't let you do this. We have to turn him over to the authorities. And the Punisher's like, no, this guy's too dangerous to be allowed to live. If he'll just get out of jail, he'll just bail out. He'll just bond out. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to take him out. So there's that conflict, you know, and of course they're super powered and he isn't, but he's got a gun and they're capable of being injured or killed. So it's like Spider-Man and Daredevil and the rest. They're like, how do we control this loose cannon, you know? So that's entertaining to me too.
I agree. Spider-Man has always been kind of like, look, Frank, I appreciate your help, but you can't kill people.
Yeah.
Frank, no, like he's like, I can. It's really easy. Watch, you know?
Yeah. And when he does, you know, Spider-Man, you know that when someone dies at Spider-Man's hand, it was a total accident. And then he beats himself up because he ruminates like no one else ruminates. Like, I should have done this. You know, he plays 1,000 different scenarios in his head for how he could have handled the situation differently. And the Punisher's just like, nah, this is just another day. You know, somebody died, you know, whatever.
Right.
It was either him or me. You know, that's his mentality. Yeah. And Daredevil, too, to the same extent. He's like, well, you know, I've got to do the right thing. After all, I'm an attorney. The scales of justice have got to go, you know, the right way. But no, yeah, there's no such compunction with the Punisher. And I'd say again, he has to be that way because of his limitations. And when the Punisher goes hand to hand with Kingpin, you know, he can get beat up, he can get hurt because the Kingpin is just freakishly strong.
Yeah,
he gets a bear hug on you, he's going to break something.
Kingpin made his first appearance in Amazing Spider-Man number 50. A lot of first appearances in Spider-Man comics in the early days. A lot of appearances, first appearances in Fantastic Four and Avengers in the early days as well. In fact, those are the treasure troves. Those are the gold mines of the Silver Age of comics. If you have that run, that entire run, and you've been collecting for a while, you've got a lot of money. Like, I remember like when I first saw Michael Clark Duncan in the Daredevil film, as the Kingpin,
mm-hmm. yeah,
I was like, oh my God, like this guy is perfect. And
oh, yeah.
And he was. And then they brought it to a new level and they brought this smoldering intensity that was Vincent D'Onofrio into the role in the Daredevil series.
Oh, definitely. The scene where he kills a man by bashing his head in the car door, it just was, I was floored. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Of course.
I was certainly stunned, mm-hmm. to say the least, and in awe at his acting ability. It made me love the character, to be honest.
And I think Vincent D'Onofrio has a record set for like the most weight gained and lost by an actor. I read that.
Yeah.
He gained a tremendous amount for Full Metal Jacket and then he lost it all. And then he regained it to play Kingpin in the Daredevil series. So he's fluctuated. I mean, Christian Bale lost a lot of weight too for The Machinist, but Vincent D'Onofrio lost just actually more weight. Maybe not as a percentage of his base weight, but certainly he holds a record for that. So it's kind of interesting. And I like the way he played off of the Punisher in the Daredevil series too, off of John Bernthal's character.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was great. Like,
what a disturbing prison scene that was, the fight they got into.
Yes. Yes.
It made you think Frank Castle wasn't going to get out of that alive. He was outnumbered.
Outnumbered.
Got to grab a shank. Yeah, and just stab away. Yeah, so there's different Punishers, you know, that we could discuss. Like in film, we'd mentioned Dolph Lundgren, and then there was Thomas Jane. I liked his Punisher as well, and Ray Stevenson in Punisher Warzone, and then John Bernthal. There's any others I can't really think of who they were or when, but those are the ones, the principal Punisher in live action films, mm-hmm. and that I can think of. So
so when it comes to the Punisher, as far as like these in film and in television, you said that you preferred Dolph Lundgren, or you just liked his performance. Who was your favorite out of all those performances?
Well, as far as the movies, I would say Ray Stevenson. I liked Punisher War Journal because I thought it was just a whole different take on the character. It was a grittiness. He had body armor from the very beginning of the film. He was the Punisher. You didn't have the whole origin thing so much where, okay, this is how his family got killed. He was already kind of plugged in, you know, and I liked the way that was brought to the screen. And it was, you know, just very gritty. There's the scene where he's got the broken nose and he takes a pencil and he resets it. And it's just, it's jarring.
Yeah.
You know,
and I agree. Like, we had already seen his origin. And when movies do, like when they reboot and they do an origin again and again and again, you know, it was a different Punisher. We had just seen, I can't remember his name, but he was in the first Lionsgate Punisher. And then Ray Stevenson came on the screen.
Thomas Jane?
Yes, thank you. Thomas Jane. We saw Thomas Jane. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, Thomas Jane is great.
It's all right, yeah.
Then we saw, like, Ray Stevenson, and he was electric. Like, he fit the look of Garth Ennis's run and Steve Dillon's run of The Punisher to a T. And they tried their best to make it look like the comic book as well. You know, the real neon greens and things and the eclectic characters and the silly fight scenes that looked great in comic book form. But when you see it in live action, you're like, oh, man, that's insane. Like that guy doing all these flips and then suddenly just gets exploded with a bazooka. That was pretty freaking hilarious, I will say.
Yeah. And then there's that. And then there's the scene where the woman points a gun at him and he feels so bad because her husband's dead and he feels somewhat responsible. So he actually takes the pistol and says, this is how you do it. I mean, this man is not afraid to die because he's lost everything. You get that sense. It's like, it's chilling, but it's also entertaining. here he's telling this woman, this is how you kill me. You know, you do all this, and then he doesn't do it, or she doesn't kill him, and then he ends up saving her and her daughter, and everything works out in the end, albeit after I don't know how many people were killed to get to the end of that film. But it was gritty. I was on the edge of my seat throughout the whole movie. And, you know, I'll say this for John Bernthal in the series. I thoroughly enjoyed that as well. I think he was probably one of the better actors they could have gotten for the Netflix series.
Yeah.
And that just had one run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It had one season, but, you know, that's all that they felt they could do with it. But I think there was so much in that one season that, to me, it's the same as if it had gone on three or four seasons. You know, it had enough substance for me. I got my Punisher fix from
that. Yeah. I think, if I recall, they did do two seasons on it. But I think, like, we've all forgotten the second season because it wasn't really very good. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it seemed to have blended almost into just one season.
I bet you what happened is, I'm going to guarantee you this is probably what happened. You left Netflix on play, and it went from one episode to the other. So it went from the first season right into the second season, and you didn't even notice.
Yeah, because I remembered this. I remember the Punisher being a presence in Daredevil season two, and then I watched Punisher season one without, I guess, even realizing there was a season two.
Yep, that can
and
happen.
And then, before you know it, the series is canceled, and then, you know, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, was there just one season of Punisher? It seemed that way.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, they can always... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, they can always bring him back, as they're doing with Daredevil in the new She-Hulk series.
That's true. Yeah, they certainly can. I think they're going to bring Charlie Cox into that as well. As we now all know, Charlie Cox is, I think, officially in the next Spider-Man film that's coming out in December.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
he'll be utilized in films and the She-Hulk series. Okay. Interesting.
Right. So they've now brought in, officially with him, they will have brought in the Netflix MCU. Into the MCU, so the Netflix you know, Marvel universe, so I don't know what you would say, but they're officially balancing and bringing in some of the characters from Netflix into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that's exciting because then they plug them in, because Charlie Cox was a great Daredevil. Let's be real, he was a great Daredevil. He was a great Matt Murdock.
Yeah, and I thought that deserved an extra season too, but for whatever reason, I guess they just didn't get the ratings. And that show ended when it did. But and the other thing I really liked about the Netflix Marvel series is that they acknowledged the movies. They're tied into the same universe. You didn't have this division like you had with the Fox movies, and you can't mention this and you can't mention that because they have licensing issues and all that, and now that's being broken down too with WandaVision.
Yeah, you could mention it right away, and that's fine. You know, okay. You could do that. What I wanted to mention really quickly was that with Thomas Jane particularly, did you get a chance to see his short film that he did? It's called The Punisher: Dirty Laundry.
No, but I've heard of it. I'm gonna have to watch that soon.
Frank, you've got to watch it. As a fan of The Punisher, you have to see it. It's I'm 100% sure you can find it on YouTube. You just type it in there. When we're done here, watch it. It's 10 minutes. Let me know what you think. I think it is probably encapsulates the best of The Punisher, who The Punisher is, what he's about, and why he does what he does. And they did it in 10 minutes. This is Thomas Jane.
Wow.
Love letter. He really wanted to stay as The Punisher. And he was like, look, I didn't write that, but here's something I had a part in crafting, and this is what I can do with the character if given the correct material. So
I'm just now looking at this, and it says it was made in 2012, so that would have been 8 years after he was in the Punisher movie.
Kind of nuts, right?
Yeah, and then they'd made Punisher Warzone in between that time. Mm-hmm. So, but then, you know, this 8 years later, he's like, you know what? I never wanted it to go to Ray Stevenson. I wanted to be the Punisher and keep going with it.
That's exactly
that is interesting.
Like knowing probably that Netflix or some other other streaming service was going to eventually pick it up. And he's like, I need to be a part of this, guys. Look at me. Here I am. Yeah. It ultimately did not work, but it is one hell of a short little film. So it's worth definitely.
Oh, okay. I'll watch that. Thanks for making me aware of that. Yeah. It's
big Punisher fan like yourself. You should see some of the best of the best. And I think that is, you know, other incarnations of the Punisher. We've seen him in the Spider-Man animated series from the 90s. He was in that.
Oh yeah. And he used a laser gun because you can't use bullets in cartoons. It's not like the old days with Speed Racer when you'd actually see bullets get fired.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, at some point, we can't do that. We have to have lasers. And then on the rare occasion when a character gets hit by a laser, they're like, ow, but they don't die.
They're just like annoyed with it. And you're like, okay. Yeah.
And even in G.I. Joe, the movie, the cartoon movie, they couldn't have Duke die because apparently the death of Optimus Prime was just too devastating to child audiences. So at the very end, they write, oh, Duke's going to pull through. That's not what was originally written.
No, it was not. And they were so, his kids were so mortified about Optimus Prime dying that they were like, shit.
Yeah. I was, you know, and it's funny because the guy Flint Dill, who was part of that production, said, we just thought we could kill them off because they're robots. It's no big deal. It's not like they're people or anything. And then the kids were so upset that he's like, all right, we definitely can't kill off Duke because he's like a cartoon human. It's going to hit too close to home. We've already wrecked ourselves with the Transformers. Oh, yeah. They also deleted a scene where Ultra Magnus really gets thrashed. You know, by the Decepticons, they just said it was too violent. So I saw the sketches for that. It was really interesting. But,
yeah. I was pretty heartbroken about Ultra Magnus too, because I thought he was cool as shit. I was like, wow, okay, so Optimus is dead. Let's let this dude succeed. And then like 2 minutes later, he's freaking like gone. He's like basically just falling apart, and he couldn't open up the Matrix to like, you know, or whatever it was.
He couldn't get it to protect himself with the Matrix. So then the Junkions put them together, and I'm thinking,
I can't remember.
I'm thinking the Junkions, they can bring Ultra Magnus back to life. Why don't they just do that for Optimus Prime? Yeah. It's like a major plot hole in the film.
It's a big problem. So really quickly, writer Stephen Grant noted this about the Punisher. He said Heidegger, who took Kierkegaard's philosophy further, comes even closer to describing the Punisher. Since we can never hope to understand why we're here, if there's even anything to understand, the individual should choose a goal and pursue it wholeheartedly, despite the certainty of death and the meaninglessness of action. That's sure the Punisher as I conceived him, a man who knows he's going to die and who knows in the big picture his actions will count for nothing, but who pursues his course because this is what he has chosen to do. And I thought that was interesting. He said Punisher co-creator Jerry Conway stated that the Punisher is a great Rorschach test. What's given him his some sustainability is you can put him into whatever you want, as opposed to Spider-Man, who truly is who he is and shouldn't be changed. The Punisher is a thin character on his own merits that allows for a lot of interpretations and different angles of approach. So I think that's part of the reason why we love the Punisher so much, is that you can take him and throw him into any type of situation. You could put him in space. He'll find a way to survive. You know, you can put him in a volcano. He's going to get a way out. Just a normal, ordinary man that has a moral code that's so malleable that he's like, I'm going to do whatever I can to end you because you're a bad guy, and I'm going to do whatever I can to find a way out of this. And if I don't, as long as I end you, I will have served my purpose in life. And that's crazy to think about. He's so laser focused on a mission to eliminate the enemy, to somebody that does harm to other people because of the harm that was done upon his wife and child. And it's heartbreaking. It's tragic, but it also makes for great cinema in the comic book world. And I think that that in essence is why we both love the Punisher so much, and why he's your favorite character. And you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that really kind of boils it down.
Oh yeah, it encapsulates it fully. And I just say like one final point. Jerry Conway said that the Punisher's popularity took him by surprise, as he had intended him only to be a second tier character. So he was a breakthrough. He thought, oh, this will just be like a supplemental thing, you know, to make Spider-Man look good or better than he did before. But he, the fans really took a liking to him. And, you know, when comic book fans want more of something, you give it to them.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
I gave him more of the Punisher.
In the 90s, he couldn't have crossed over into more things. He couldn't have had more one shots. They punished us to death with the Punisher because he was in everything. He crossed over with Batman, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. He was in like his own like I remember buying a graphic novel called The Punisher, the Scottish Connection, I believe is what it was called, or Blood on the Moors or something like that. It was a very Scottish kind of a story where he was in Scotland just killing the shit out of people. Like they everywhere. They put him in on a NASA space station. They've put him they have changed the man. They created Frankencastle. They turned him into a Frankenstein character. And fought crime as Frankenstein, basically put together piece by piece. I mean, the man has done so much and been a part of so many things. It's amazing, but it also shows the love for the character and the love of the fans for the character. And I think that's great. And I'm really glad that you chose this character. Probably partially because I would imagine when you were a kid, he had the same name and you were like, that's cool. But also because he was kind of a badass and you were like, man, I could be that badass too easily. I'm not radioactive. I'm not bitten by a spider, but I am a man. I can be on a mission and I can stop crime. And that's the important part, I think.
Oh yeah.
Anything you want to say kind of to close this out about Frank, the Punisher, and anything about him that, that kind of that you didn't get to mention yet that you just kind of want to bring up real quick?
Just one final thought. I always got the sense that the Punisher felt like he was going to die at any moment, and he doesn't end up dying. He survives. He lives another day to fight crime, to take out the worst of the worst. And so that's also something quite incredible about the character, is just his staying power, the fact that he hasn't been killed.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's a great thing to end on with this. And Frank, again, I want to thank you for being on. And
my pleasure, Donald. Anytime.
Thank you. And I want to thank our audience for listening. I also want to remind our audience that we do a live podcast almost every Monday. It's on YouTube Live, 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, on the Rumble Spoon Productions page on YouTube. We are also, these audio podcasts that you're listening to right now are also available on a multitude of platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Sprecher, Stitcher, a whole host of others you can find us on. Odds are, if you have a platform, you can find us. If you can't, reach out to us, let us know. Reach out to us, email us if you want. You can also reach out to us on Facebook. We're on there. We're on Instagram. We are on Twitter. So we're all over the place. You can always find us and let us know, and we'll get on that platform for you. But again, I would like to thank you all for listening. And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon,
we will see you at the comic shop.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. You guys have a good night. Thank you for joining.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.